study guide of Ajahn Jess. It's called Constructing the Aggregate. So it's a collection of different descriptions from the suttas. This first one is from Machima 28. And this is Sariputta. And what, friends, is form as a clinging aggregate? The four great existence and the form derived from them, and the four material elements. And what are the four great existence? They are the earth property, the liquid property, the fire property, and the wind property. And what is the earth property? The earth property can be either internal or external. What is the internal earth property? Whatever internal within oneself is hard, solid, and sustained by craving. Head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, tendons, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, pleura, spleen, lungs, large intestine, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else internal within oneself is hard, solid, and sustained. This is called the internal earth property. And what is the liquid property? The liquid property may be either internal or external. What is the internal liquid property? Whatever internal belonging to oneself is liquid, watery, and sustained by craving, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, skin oil, saliva, mucus, fluid in the joints, urine, or whatever else internal within oneself is liquid, watery, and sustained. This is called the internal liquid property. And what is the fire property? The fire property may be either internal or external. What is the internal fire property? Whatever internal belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and sustained, that by which the body is warmed, aged, and consumed with fever, and that by which what is eaten, drunk, chewed, and savored gets properly digested, or whatever else internal within oneself is fire, fiery, and sustained. This is called the internal fire property. And what is the wind property? The wind property may be either internal or external. What is the internal wind property? Whatever internal belonging to oneself is wind, windy and sustained, upgoing winds, downgoing winds, winds in the stomach, winds in the intestines, winds that course through the body, in and out breathing, or whatever else within oneself is wind, windy and sustained. This is called the internal wind property. This is from Samyutta 22, Sutta 57. And what is feeling? These six bodies of feeling, feeling born of eye contact, feeling born of ear contact, feeling born of nose contact, feeling born of tongue contact, feeling born of body contact, feeling born of intellect contact. This is called feeling. So that's a slightly different description than, say, the most common is the feeling in terms of its type of feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. But the Buddha also does, as is evidence here, just describing it, this feeling that arises through the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And then Majjhima 44, this is Sister de Medina. There are three kinds of feeling: pleasant feeling, painful feeling, and neither pleasant nor painful feeling. Whatever is experienced physically or mentally as pleasant and gratifying is pleasant feeling. Whatever is experienced physically or mentally as painful and hurting is painful feeling. Whatever is experienced physically or mentally as neither gratifying nor hurting is neither pleasant nor painful feeling. Pleasant feeling is pleasant in remaining and painful in changing. Painful feeling is painful in remaining and pleasant in changing. Neither pleasant nor painful feeling is pleasant when conjoined with knowledge and painful when devoid of knowledge. So it's an interesting perspective on feeling, recognizing how it how we experience it, shifts and changes. Yeah.
Is there another place in the suttas where neutral feeling is pleasant when conjoined with mindfulness?
Could be. I could be. I don't. I mean, I couldn't. Quote it back to you, where it is. But it's not. That's a. Whether it's. See, in this case, it's called knowledge. Whether it was conjoined with mindfulness, certainly possible. Okay. So the next quote is Samyutta 22, Sutta number 57. And what is perception? These six bodies of perception, perception of form, perception of sound, perception of smell, perception of taste, perception of tactile sensation, perception of ideas. This is called perception. There was another sutta read a couple days ago where perception was, defined in terms of perceiving, or function of perception, in terms of perceiving color. And that this is red, this is green, this is blue. Because on a certain level, that's actually all we see. We see color. But it is another function of perception is then to take that color and shape and then bring it back to what does it mean? Because in Thai, when perception is is translated into Thai, it's both memory and giving meaning to experience, so that some kind of manmai, and so like giving meaning to experience. So it's like taking, because what we actually perceive is color and shape, and we have to actually have a name on it and a label, and actually get it through our memory and remember those things, what it actually is, or what it's conventionally called. It's called a tree or a window or a person, what that person's name is.
I'll get into it in there, but Marver and Sumitra and Jeff said that in the suttas your perception is like color or things like that, then it gets into consciousness is like taste.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I don't understand why that. I can understand it in terms of, like color with perception, but then, and I read it the other day as well, where when like consciousness is, salty and sweet and salty and sour and astringent, and that's what consciousness defined by, and it has to be defined by something, but I think it's where that comes from. I'm not quite sure in terms of arbitrarily, because being conscious is also being conscious of the different sense doors as well. That's another way it's defined.
I was reading that last night. Says to the 22, Samyutta 22.
Uh-huh.
I think it's actually the sutra that came from the
Buddha. Oh, yeah.
When he gets enlightened, given the Dhamma talk.
Yeah, yeah.
end of the narrative that, and that, and then it talks about how putting it on perception or thinking on it, like, either way, it's like a squishy.
If I recall correctly, I was reading just a couple days ago, mentioned something about this, that specific passage is that's referring to consciousnesses, the process of cognizing as discriminatory.
That's right.
Oh, here it is. But it's in a footnote.
Yeah.
I don't see a footnote on consciousness. Okay. The next one is also from Sanyutta 22:57. And what are fabrications? Sankara. There are these six classes of intention. Intention aimed at sights, sounds, smells, taste, tactile sensations, and ideas. These are called fabrications. And then there's another one on fabrications and sankara, Diga Nikaya 33. The three kinds of fabrications. Meritorious fabrications, ripening in pleasure. Demeritorious fabrications, ripening in pain. Imperturbable fabrications, the formless jhanas. So those are different form of mental formations. And then from Majjhima 44, the Visakha questioning Sister Damodina. And what, lady, are bodily formations? What are verbal fabrications? What are verbal fabrications? What are mental fabrications? And the answer, in and out breathing is bodily, bound up with the body, therefore is it called a bodily fabrication. Kaya Sankara, and that's when they, in the Anapanasati Sutta, at the fourth section of fourth instruction in Anapanasati is concerning this bodily Kaya Sankara, bodily fabrication. Having directed one's thought and evaluated the matter, one breaks into speech. Therefore, directed thought and evaluation are called verbal fabrications. Perception and feeling are mental, bound up with the mind. Therefore, perception and feeling are called mental fabrications. Any questions on the sankaras? In the sense of having some clarity around it, because just by nature, then neutral feeling is nebulous, and when things are nebulous, kind of ill-formed, not understood, then it's kind of uncomfortable, unpleasant. But when there is that knowledge and understanding, then it's something that is brought into focus and is clarified. So it's there's more of a sense of ease and comfort around it.
The question about the perception and feeling. I thought those were just conditional arisings on account of contact.
They are, but because of the interplay between perception and feeling, and they arise because of contact, then what you get is that bubbling up of of the movement of the mind and thoughts and ideas, ideation starts to formulate from that experience of.
Well, we more sensitive and call those mental fabrication initiators rather than mental fabrication?
Well, I mean, I think they are actually. Because the nature of the word sankhara isn't just a noun, because you say when you in the English language you have to make a choice, and you don't have to make that choice in Pali, so that either you make it a noun or you make it a verb. And so that's why I say, like, when Ajahn Buddhadasa had his, say, the Anapanasati translated, then he would call it the mental conditioner, so that it's sort of like perception and feeling were mental conditioners, and although that's still a noun, but it's a. Maybe it's more of a, it has a more active role, as opposed to static. In terms of fabrication, is kind of a done deal, something that's happened. But the function of sankhara is I mean, it both happens, but is happening, so that it works in both ways.
So in the case of the bodily fabrication, this is something that seems pretty passive. It's being fabricated to moment by moment.
Yeah.
Everything happens, but it's not. It doesn't seem to be necessarily involved in volition.
Right.
We talk of
vichara. Yeah. Vitaka vichara are certainly those are also. Certainly involving volition, and of course that's what the again that's the use of sankhara, because sankhara as a khanda is in the five khandas is a particular usage, and particularly. Its distinguishing characteristic is volition, and then the so that this is kind of taking sankhara as of a compounded nature, as opposed to and then saying. There's bodily things of a compounded nature. There's verbal things of a compounded nature, and there's mental things of a compounded nature. And it's a bit conflated in the because this is a description of the khandhas. So it's just kind of conflated between the two here. So it is a bit sort of blurring the boundary on the actual definition. Whereas, say, a part of that, certainly the mental fabrications are part of the, and the verbal fabrications really are part of the sankhara khanda. But then the bodily fabrications are not. It's kind of a done deal already.
So, like, two of them are virgin ones and now.
Yeah.
Before, like in the Anapanasati Sutta, about like the large majority of that practice is like intentionally working with the sankhara and different sankharas and calming them like, in a very volitional way.
Yes.
Including like bodily formations.
Yeah. Bodily formations and the mental formations. Yeah, and one is very consciously calming the sanya and vedana, one's settling the mind down and settling that aspect of feeling and making it a bit more settled and refined. Same with the with working with the breath, Settling the body down so that the mind can settle as well. So yeah, see.
Kind of depends on the way that I guess different teachers teach in different ways. If you focus on the meditation, and that the result of that is it calms those. Sometimes that's a bit more active for you.
Oh, you act. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's quite well. Of course, it's my own bias, but yeah, I think there's an active or proactive engaging in calming and settling.
Just on that, in terms of sankhara, so in its broadest use, it would be using first day kind of compounded phenomena. So is that really?
Yeah, so be sankhara and nicha.
Yeah.
Just that's sort of everything except nirvana. So, but yeah, that word sankhara is used in many different contexts. One has to sort of look at the context to get a better feeling for what is being meant.
And there's instruction in the dialogue between Visakha and Dhammajina. That's also very contextual. They're talking about the meditation rather than trying to define the
Right. Yeah,
as
yeah,
a whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is this, the three distinctions,
yeah.
And the one in the Pitya Sampada is defined as three distinctions, and then there's the six sense basis in the context. Because in all these contexts, you only find that one definition.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, on to consciousness. This is being defined from Sanyutta 22, Sutta 57. And what is consciousness? These six bodies of consciousness, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, intellect consciousness, this is called consciousness. It's quite basic and straightforward, which is... hopefully helpful simplification. Then in the in the study guide, then from the same sutta, Sanyutta 22:57, Ajahn Jeff draws a conditional relations, how they work together. From the origination of nutriment comes the origination of form. From the cessation of nutriment comes the cessation of form. From the origination of contact comes the origination of feeling. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling. From the origination of contact comes the origination of perception. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of perception. From the origination of contact comes the origination of fabrications. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of fabrications. From the origination of name and form comes the origination of consciousness. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of consciousness. Those are that function of contact and the interaction between feeling, perception, fabrications, and then the integration of consciousness with the mind and body complex. These are conditioned. Okay, the next one is from Majjhima 109, which is very similar. Well, that's one that I read, but it's this one little section would be worth repeating. So a certain monk asks, Lord, what is the cause, what the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of form? What is the cause, what the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of feeling, perception, fabrications, consciousness? The Buddha, monk, the four great existents, earth, water, fire, and wind, are the cause, the four great existents, the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of form. Contact is the cause, contact the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of feeling. Contact is the cause, contact the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of perception. Contact is the cause, contact the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of fabrications. Name and form is the cause, name and form the condition for the delineation of the aggregate of consciousness. So those were all kind of short, pithy things around the definitions and of the aggregates. So I'll finish today with a sutta, which is the beginning, the first sutta of the Khanda Samyutta, the whole book, the Khanda Vaka, the book on the aggregates, and it's a thorough analysis by Sariputta, sort of as is his wont. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Bhagas at Sumaragira. In the Besakala Grove, the deer park. Then the householder Nakulapita approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, I am old, venerable sir, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage, afflicted in body, often ill. I rarely get to see the Blessed One and the bhikkhus worthy of esteem. Let the Blessed One exhort me, venerable sir, let him instruct me, since that would lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time. So it is, householder, so it is. This body of yours is afflicted, weighed down, encumbered. If anyone carrying around this body were to claim to be healthy, even for a moment, what is that due to other than foolishness? Therefore, householder, you should train yourself thus. Even though I am afflicted in body, my mind will be unafflicted. Thus should you train yourself. Then the householder Nakulapita, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's statement, rose from his seat and having paid homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on his right, he approached the Venerable Sariputta. Having paid homage to the Venerable Sariputta, he sat down to one side, and the Venerable Sariputta then said to him, Householder, your faculties are serene, your facial complexion is pure and bright. Did you get to hear a Dhamma talk today in the presence of the Blessed One? Why not, Venerable Sir? Just now I was anointed by the Blessed One with the ambrosia of a Dhamma talk. With what kind of ambrosia of a Dhamma talk did the Blessed One anoint you, householder? Here, Venerable Sir, I approach the Blessed One, and then he repeats the entire conversation with the Buddha. It was with the ambrosia of such a Dhamma talk, Venerable Sir, that the Blessed One anointed me. Didn't it occur to you, householder, to question the Blessed One further as to how one is afflicted in body and afflicted in mind, and how one is afflicted in body but not afflicted in mind? We would come from far away, Venerable Sir, to learn the meaning of this statement from the Venerable Sariputta. It would be good indeed if the Venerable Sariputta would clear up the meaning of this statement. Then listen and attend closely, householder, I will speak. Yes, Venerable Sir, the householder Nakulapita replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this, How, householder, is one afflicted in body and afflicted in mind? Here, householder, the uninstructed worldling, who is not a seer of the noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who is not a seer of superior persons, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards form as self, or self as possessing form. or form as in self, or self as in form. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am form, form is mine. As he lives obsessed by these notions, that form of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of form, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. He regards feeling as self, or self as possessing feeling, or feeling as in self, or self as in feeling. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am feeling, feeling is mine. As he lives obsessed by these notions, that feeling of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of feeling, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. He regards perception as self, or self as possessing perception, or perception as in self, or self as in perception. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am perception, perception is mine. As he lives obsessed by these notions, that perception of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of perception, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. He regards volitional formations as self, or self as possessing volitional formations, or volitional formations as in self, or self as in volitional formations. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am volitional formations. Volitional formations are mine. As he lives obsessed by these notions, those volitional formations of his change and alter. With the change and alteration of volitional formations, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. He regards consciousness as self, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. He lives obsessed by the notions, I am consciousness, consciousness is mine. As he lives obsessed by these notions, that consciousness of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of consciousness, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. It is in such a way, householder, that one is afflicted in body and afflicted in mind. And how, householder, is one afflicted in body, but not afflicted in mind? Here, householder, the instructed noble disciple, who is a seer of the noble ones, and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, who is a seer of superior persons, and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, does not regard form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. He does not live obsessed by the notions, I am form, form is mine. As he lives unobsessed by these notions, that form of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of form, there do not arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. And of course the same for feeling, perception, volitional formations. He does not regard consciousness as self, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. He does not live obsessed by the notions, I am consciousness, consciousness is mine. As he lives unobsessed by these notions, that consciousness of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of consciousness, there do not arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. It is in such a way, householder, that one is afflicted in body, but not afflicted in mind. This is what the Venerable Sariputta said. Elated, the householder Nakulapita delighted in the Venerable Sariputta's statement.